Hey, ghosties, we hope you're having a great summer. Did you miss us? Well, we're not coming back yet. But what you can do is you can listen to an old episode of ours that you may or may not have heard of yet, because it was way back in season one, episode 6,
Traveling the World on God's Dime. Short-term missions, bitches.
Just listen to us as we discuss our own illustrious travels throughout the world to share the word of God. Except I only traveled domestically, and that was mostly in the Midwest. So for me, it wasn't as glamorous, but you know, actually I didn't really raise money for that either. Okay. I didn't do missions. I didn't. I just never did it.
Whoopsies.
But because it's summertime, which is like epic travel times, we're all going fun places, doing fun things. But back when we were good old evangelical Christian youths, we spent all of our summers traveling to go tell the world about Jesus. So we thought it might be a good time to re-release this episode and have you learn a little bit more about some of our missional pursuits.
That's right. If you're going on a road trip, this is a great episode for you as you drive through the gorgeous lands of wherever you are. Just imagine us, bright-faced and rosy-cheeked virgins, all of us, definitely.
Yes, definitely.
And so chaste.
And yet, such wonderful little white saviors in the making.
We're really good at it. And we have some pretty insane stories from our midtime missions. So it's a very fun episode, and we have a lot of new listeners these days. Yay. Thank you. So we just thought we'd put this back in the old feed because it's a fun time. And if you're traveling anywhere on God's dime or your own this summer, like, put this in the old earbuds and give it a whirl.
If you like what we're doing and you want to hear us in between episodes, please come and join us over on TikTok or on Facebook. We have a really great group over there. Just look us up, Holy Ghosting. Wherever you want to find us, we're probably there. And if you like what we're doing and want to give us some dollars, check us out over on patreon.com/holyghosting. See you soon, ghosties.
It's banter. Bantering. Watermelon. What? Watermelon.
I don't know about the Holy Spirit, but according to Luke chapter 1, he did come on Mary. So you tell me. You tell me.
Sounds like a dude.
Yeah.
Welcome to Holy Ghosting, a podcast about deconstruction from your middle-aged mom friends. I'm Lindsay, and I attend an Episcopal church in Portland, Oregon, and I do not believe that the earth is 10,000 years old.
And I'm Meg, and I do not attend a church in Oregon, and I don't know what we're talking about today, so I will get you back at the end of the show with my funny quip.
And I'm Sarai, and I believe I dreamed up the earth, and it could be any shape it wants to be, because I believe in us.
Yes, we can.
So today we are not talking about creation versus evolution. I just was thinking about ridiculous things that Christians believe, and that's what came to mind during the intro. Today, we're going to talk about short-term missions. Before we jump into that, and we gals, guys and gals, non-binaries, all of you, close your eyes.
Oh, no. Is this an altar call?
It's not an altar call. I want to set the mood. Mm-hmm. I want us to be transported to the days of our youth.
Some visualizations.
This is a little excerpt from, I'm not going to tell you what it's from. I'm going to read it and then I'll tell you.
Okay, let me get in the zone. Just closed eyes,
head bowed, every eye closed. Invite anybody who feels like it can afford it on a trip. Safe but adventurous place. Raise funds. Click loads of supplies by matching t-shirts printed with a catchy logo and or a leading question to use as a traveling evangelism tool. Create a detailed packing list. Travel to destination and matching shirts. Be sure to strike up at least one conversation at every stop to indicate that you are serving the Lord Jesus Christ. Stay as a group in a dorm, church, hostel, or hotel. Quote unquote, help poor people or the disaster afflicted by offering unskilled labor, unwanted prayer, and cartoon Bible tracts. Give away some junk. On the last night of the trip, order pizza because everybody is so sick to death of the local food. Arrive home, slightly conflicted, burdened for the less fortunate, unsure if any actual help occurred, but grateful for all of your blessings. Share none of your doubts, but tell family, friends, and especially financial supporters that it was an awesome trip and that you totally saw God at work. Now you can open your eyes. Does this feel familiar? Has anybody walked this path before?
Oh, many, many times.
My missions have been missions, like a misadventure, but missions.
Maybe not so glorious as described. So that was a little excerpt from Jamie, the very worst missionary. Clearly, she has some short-term missions experience, as do we all. So I want to preface with, for those of you who aren't familiar with short-term missions, that did a pretty good job of describing what it was. But I don't know what the actual definition of how long a short-term mission trip is, but it is short. You are not going there and you're not living there as a missionary, but you are going as a missionary with a group of people and you are going to do the Lord's work.
I could think of it as a vacation missions trip. So you're not packing up your whole house and moving there. Your bed is still at your house, probably your parents' house. And you got a return flight already. You're not going on a one-way
ticket. When you're coming home. Yep.
Yeah. For me, that's a short-term mission, right? On a bus or on a plane, on a train, probably.
For any of those who listen to our camp episode, to me, if it's got a lot of the same vibes, a little less like teenagers crying and going down to altar calls. It's more like you want the other people to do that.
They're just not voluntary participants in an altar call, but they're still receiving it in their day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yay! I always think about it by, do you have to leave the country to renew your tourist visa or not? And that's because mm-hmm. of my various friends who've done both short and long-term missions who've had to brave a canoe crossing of some river somewhere to get to that other country on the other side and so they can come right back so they can continue their beautiful missions.
Sorry, is this on a vacation visa? This is not a work visa.
So I'm going to rattle off the countries I have been to on a short-term missions trip. And then I would love to hear from y'all where you have been. So I have done some short-term missions in my day, but my family was a very big YWAM family. So I have my parents and I have two sisters, and I am the only person in my family who has not done a DTS of my own.
Boo. What a fail.
I hold that card dearly, but I was sort of forced into one because we did a family one when I was 11 or 12. So in YWAM, you can do a DTS, which is discipleship training school. It's like several months endeavor. You're on the base, your city, for several months, and then you go on outreach for a couple months. And they also offer a program called Crossroads for older people or families. So my parents signed up for a Crossroads, and there was not enough people who signed up for it. So they just combined us with the DTS. So it was my parents and three children, one single mom, and then a bunch of college students who went to Mexico together. So that was a fun time. So I have been to Mexico, but my dad was a youth pastor growing up and we lived in Northern California and we would drive down to Ensenada at least once a year. And even though I wasn't in his youth group, I was too young. I went to Mexico many, many, many times. But then of my own volition, I have been on a mission trip to Uganda and one to Turkey and kind of one to Croatia. Like I visited missionaries who were living in Croatia, but I didn't do like missions work while there. So I don't know if that counts. So Croatia, Turkey, Mexico, Uganda. That's where I have been.
Lindsay, did you think you were on a missions trip though? I mean, I think it's more about what's in your heart than really what you end up doing.
Oh, I mean, mostly I just wanted to like see cute boys in Europe.
I've heard there's some cute boys in Europe.
Yes, very. But I was traveling with my middle sister, who is, I love her dearly, but she was not into boys. And we are very funny traveling companions. So she was always like, oh, Lindsay, I did not kiss a single European boy.
Boo.
Boo. Since we were going to Turkey on this mission trip and had raised funds for that, but we traveled before and after, I think there was this sense of like, since we had raised some support, we needed to do very Christian-y things. So we stayed with missionaries who we hadn't met before, but like a friend of a friend. Anyways, they were delightful. I loved them. The missionaries in Croatia, they were like wonderful people and we had a great time.
I just really want to go to Croatia. So I was going to see if I could get some numbers, if I hand out tracts while I'm there, if it's loud.
Croatia is a wonderful place and I still like root for them in the World Cup. After being there, they were like such delightful people and people are always inviting you into their homes, cooking up feasts. There's a lot of like kebab, like a lot of like sausagey things. And we ate a ton of burek, which is this delicious like stuffed pastry with either meat or cheese in it. And then usually like homemade grape wine. And it's totally a culture where when you're like, no, I'm good, they just keep like pouring in your glass. And we were just such like white Christian evangelicals who were like, these like Christians are like throwing lots of, and it's not wine, it's like grape booze, you know, like it is moonshine that they are pouring into your cups. So that's why I was like, oh, the Croatians, they are good people.
I want to go to there. I love them already. They sound like Portuguese people, but with more bread around the meat and cheese. That's all wonderful.
Yeah, okay. There was a decent amount of bread. Yeah, a lot of pastries, a lot of good coffee. And I will say one horrible thing I learned is that we met a woman there who she was good friends with the missionaries that we stayed with. And she had had some financial insecurity and finally landed a job with the United Shades of Benetton. Do you remember that brand?
Yes.
United Colors of Benetton or whatever. Yeah. And they had like a factory there in Croatia, but she was still learning like their machines and how to like put together the garments. And they paid based on like quota on how many garments. So she had been working for them for 3 weeks and had not made any money. So what? They're a bad company. So don't buy from them. That's the moral of that story.
I'm 100% sure I never have, but I can't say anything for their subsidiaries or their parent companies.
I don't even know if they're around anymore. I just remember the time they had a lot of progressive marketing, you know. I mean, shocker that a progressive company like exploits laborers.
I've never heard of something like that.
That doesn't ever happen, does it?
No.
So I'm curious, Sarai, where have you been?
I don't like to be a person who's like, oh no, Meg, go first, because I love to talk, but I kind of need Meg to go first this time because I think my ending one is very specific. So Meg, I'm passing the baton to you and passing the buck.
All right, girl.
You.
All right. So I think my very first short-term missions trip was in high school to Mexico.
Classic.
Yeah. Just it's a load a bunch of kids into an old bus that doesn't have air conditioning in the middle of summer from Central California down to Mexico. And
I'm nodding violently because this is like, yep. Mm-hmm.
This is like cut and paste of like everyone's story about going to Mexico and
Did you go to an orphanage? Yeah, I was go to an orphanage. Did you like build a building?
Built a bathroom. There was a kind of hole in the ground with some wood around it that the kids were using. So we were helping build like cinder block actual bathrooms, I guess, with toilets in them. And yeah, and then half the group was going, I think it was to build a church, or it was a home for a pastor of a church. It was very church related. Yeah, I mean, that was a fun trip. I bonded with some kids that then I had to leave and never saw again. So that was terrible. My boyfriend, who is now my husband, as we know, I had a very short amount of dating activity in my life before my virgin marriage at 20. So first time listeners, that's just a little tidbit of my history. But my 15-year-old self in Mexico with the boy I liked, and we bonded with this little boy who would always run up to us and hold our hands. And I was like, yeah, we should absolutely adopt him, right? Because what else should 15-year-olds be doing but adopting children from a foreign country whose mother language they don't speak and bring them back to California? So we did not do that, which I'm really glad to say.
Yeah,
we did not.
Yeah, they didn't
take a child from another country.
I'm really grateful your youth pastor had that kind of wisdom and foresight, like the wisdom of Solomon, really.
Right. And also really, just like the U.S. legal system would not have let you do that.
I do think that I would have been able to just bring children across the border at the time. Like it was the 90s and this was pre-9/11. I don't know. I think it would have worked. Those are like the summer trips to Mexico, you know, where everyone got the Mexico blanket and we all got our like treats at the border. We probably spent more money driving down there and buying stuff at the border than we did actually contributing to the people that we went to see. Then I too went to YWAM. For those of you that don't know, that's Youth with a Mission or Young Women After Men, or my personal favorite, Young Wolves After Maidens.
That's more fair. I like
it. That's a good one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that's exactly what I experienced. So my DTS was in Australia. And when you're on your DTS, you know, at least for me in Melbourne, we had to go out into the community and just do like preaching on the corner kind of stuff, which I never did. If you know me, that's just not a thing I do. And then I went to a lot of places on short-term missions trips, Zimbabwe and Zambia, and South Africa, Korea, Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia.
Dang, I just learned a lot about you, Meg. In that moment, I had no idea. You win at short-term missions?
No.
If this was a contest, you're the winner.
Number of places you proselytized. That's what my award's going to be in.
I haven't gotten to the question yet where I ask how many souls you save. So we'll see if you win.
Spoiler, zero.
Yes, same.
You gave it away. Oh, my gosh. Okay, everybody. If you don't want to listen to the rest of this episode, we're holy ghosting. Just kidding.
Yes. Please stick around because I have some killer stories that are going to come up in this episode.
Spoiler, it will end, but later. Okay, keep listening. I'm sorry I failed at the first rule of podcasting is stop telling people not to listen. Gathering my senses, here's what I'll say. I've been to one country on short-term missions. And every single year that I was in middle school and high school and even beyond high school, when I was like a youth group leader until I was much older than you'll expect, but I won't tell you yet. That'll be something I'll spoil later. So we always planned to go to Mexico. Every single year it was Mexico trips. There was all these pictures of the kids that were a little older than me in Mexico, like, we saved people. It was always to build a church, like some other free Methodist church in some other place in Mexico. I don't know. It was always close to Ensenada style, like around there. One year, I think it was the first year I could have gone. I was a ninth grader. And that's when you could go on a Mexico trip when I was a kid. We worked in all these different little like fundraiser things. Some people could pay, and there were like some people who paid for youth group to go on these important mission trips to other countries or other places. And some of them just paid for themselves. But then a lot of us worked in like fireworks booths and stuff. So that was like a year-round venture. And I worked every shift I ever could because I wanted to go on every youth group thing ever invented. Short-term mission trips, not excluded from that. So I work my butt off all year, ninth grade. I get to the summer. It's time to go to Mexico. We're all so excited. We all get to the church. We all get on the bus. The bus starts driving in. 30 minutes later, the bus is like, actually, no, we're not going to Mexico. Mm. And I was like, what?
That was, yeah. Satan didn't want us to.
That, or there was like a terrible accident that we would have run into in Sacramento. Mm. Like, who knows? There could be numbers, many, many reasons.
Natural disasters.
The Lord works in mysterious ways. So we were back in Eugene in like the same day. And I was devastated. So, yeah.
What did those kids in Mexico do without you being there for the week? That's the question.
Do you want to know something that's true? I literally never gave it a thought. I was so sad I didn't get to go to Mexico to help all these poor, sad children. But once I didn't get to go to Mexico, I was like, oh, I didn't get to go to Mexico. You know?
I mean, that's the wild thing about short-term missions is that while it is not a full-on vacation, I mean, I definitely like roughed it in some short-term missions. There was times like when I was in Uganda where we traveled by like taxi up to the village where everyone lives in huts. Things in Uganda had like settled down, but there were still warring tribes in some of the areas. And, you know, malaria runs rampant and you have to sleep with a malaria net over your bed. And yeah, you're just going to the bathroom like over a hole, you know, like, so it's not a vacation, but it's interesting like the way that you talk about it, sorry, your excitement to go on that trip. It's like, I look back and like, what was the draw? What was it? Like, we all wanted to go. We want to take part of this so badly. And I would surmise that it's not for the people that you're helping, although that gives you a nice little serotonin boost for sure. Those like orphans, like holding babies, it's delightful. People said this when they came back from these trips. At the end of the day, when you ask people what the takeaway was, it was your personal growth and what you learned. And it was honestly throwing white kids into other cultures and showing them that like the rest of the world does not look so much like our world.
It's the proof that your parents have been telling you that there are starving children and that's why you have to finish your plate of food. And Correct. There are kids who don't get all the things for Christmas or their birthday, and that you should be grateful, and that there are people that are less fortunate than you, but you just have to go really far to another country to find them, which is a big old fat lie.
God forbid you help the people in your own backyard.
They're not deserving poor people who we feel sorry for, because these poor people brought it upon themselves by being poor in America. Right. So that's a problem.
Well, yeah, they had like too many babies and they're on welfare and nobody wants to work anymore.
Exactly, Kim Kardashian. But
what is the justification, though, to send our children to foreign places to help poor people, but we're just not going to do it here for actual neighbors and people that we see every day?
Soraya, I see that hand.
Thank you, Lindsay. Yes, I have a testimony. I have a prophecy to share in the form of a song. It's all about you, white kids, and all this is for you, for your learning and your growth. It's not about them, the people you're quote helping. And I don't remember the last part, but I feel like Master ended up being in that song.
Did you make it up on the spot or did you write this a while ago?
It's a repurposing of a worship song.
Well, I know the worship song.
I know the actual song.
God, I was so worried I sang it badly and no one knew what
I was tracking, but I was like, did you just make up the new lyrics right now? Because my mind is fucking blown.
I sang them as the words came out my mouth, and I was but an instrument unto the Lord.
As the spirit leads.
Amen. Hallelujah.
You know what I missed, though? If next time you could just have your keyboard there with you.
Softly.
Because if you had started to just play those keys, I would have lost my shit.
You're going to be TikTok famous with this song. This is Revelation. Great.
The point is, I literally never got to go to Mexico on a short-term mission trip because...
Ever?
It never worked. There were so many times that I did not get to go to Mexico, and I went to every other thing ever invented. I'm telling you, everything else. But Mexico, for some reason... Mexico did not want me, and I want to say they dodged a bullet. I'll tell you more later. The other reason is I did get to go to one country on a mission trip, as I said, and that country was USA, USA, USA.
I thought you were going to say Canada, but
no,
USA.
It was the USA.
Where did you go?
Okay, so in high school, I went to Farmington, New Mexico to a Free Methodist-run mission. And as you know, the Free Methodist Church is small but weirdly connected. And so this mission trip took place 1 year. I believe it was 1996 because I turned 16 and I had a crush on the boy from the other youth group who was with us. Then I threw up in his lap and then he bought me flowers and sat next to me anyway. We were pen pals for years after that.
Wow.
So beautiful. Okay, so I went to New Mexico. We built a playground for their mission, question mark. And there I met a girl. Her name was Erin. And then later I saw her a couple years later at Central Christian College of Kansas, where I also met fiance too, who, by the way, was like, I know Erin. And I'm like, me too, because I went to her mission. And he's like, me too. And I'm like, cool, my youth group built a playground for them. And he goes, my youth group built a playground for them. And
then they just needed a new playground all the time.
You guys, we compared pictures of our mission trips. And it was like his friends and his youth group and my friends and my youth group doing the same exact chores, which was part of when I was like, oh, I think we're too close to this to get married, actually.
Wait, something like, out of take apart something and then more kids came and put it back together?
That's the mystery and I'll never know because Erin hasn't told me.
Out of a movie. Like, this is a...
Like, did they move it from, like, the west side of the building to the north side of the building?
Did my youth group just do a really shitty job and then they needed the Fruitland, Idaho Free Methodist Church to come to it the next year?
It's very possible.
Yeah. Can we go back to the fact that you said you did not go to Mexico ever, mm-hmm. but you did end up in New Mexico, the state. Is that what I'm... Okay.
I went to only the new version of Mexico. Yes.
The American version.
Not old Mexico.
The good old USA Mexico. Yes. That's where I went.
Amazing.
Well, okay, great. Because since the stories are flowing, my thought was like, we tell some stories and then I would like to eventually get into the problem of short-term missions. Because like most things, like how we felt about camp, like there are some like great memories wrapped up in short-term missions with me. But then also as I've gotten older, I'm just like, God damn it. Like, did I do any good? Or was that all just very harmful? But before I answer that question, I'll tell you a couple of my favorite stories from my missions trip days. I don't remember a lot from Ensenada trips when I was a kid, other than my dad would always take us to his favorite fish taco spot in Ensenada. So I remember the fish tacos more than I remember anything else because they were amazing. So when we did the Crossroads DTS as a family, we went to the YWAM base in Chico, California. And then it was like a 2 to 3 month mission trip way down in Mexico. So we were in a state called Nayarit in a city called Tepic. And not a ton of English speakers there. And then from Tepic, we kind of went out on like smaller trips. So we ended up at one point in the Huichol Mountains. You can buy Huichol hot sauce. I see it around sometimes. And so when I see it, I'll buy it. They're a native group and they still have their own tribal languages. A lot of them don't have electricity. So we went up in the hills and I remember driving this crazy winding road. And mind you, so it's me and my younger sisters and my parents and then basically teenagers. And so my poor father is being led by like an 18-year-old girl named Becky. I shit you not, that was her name. And she had a meltdown at some point during our trip and basically told my dad, who was a pastor, to like lead because she couldn't do it. So we go to the Huichol, but my sisters and I, we did really cute little like skits and songs. We would do a dance to Shine Jesus Shine and we knew it in Spanish, Priya Jesus. We would go and we would do the motions and we would sing. And the one thing I remember is we get to this Huichol village And there's like kind of a big covered building. I think it was maybe their like schoolhouse, dirt floors. And that's where pretty much everyone was sleeping. We just like laid out our sleeping bags and all slept in this big room. After we get there, we learned that like apparently these mountains have an incredibly poisonous scorpion. And like the only, if you get bit, the antidote is like, but you have to be able to identify the scorpion. The antidote or antivenom or whatever for the scorpion sting will kill you if it's the wrong kind of scorpion. So like if you get bit by one, you have to like show them what kind you were.
So, okay, hold on. So you get bit by a scorpion and then you're supposed to catch it and take it with you.
Or at least be very certain of the kind that you were harmed by. So there was that. And then we found out that a girl in the village earlier that year or like that month or something had been attacked by a vampire bat, which also inhabited the area. And then
I thought you're just going to hard stop after vampire. And I was like, this story is getting interesting.
No, a vampire bat. And then we found out.
No wonder she liked Frank Peretti so much.
And then after we left the village, we found out that apparently a traveling Chinese circus many years ago, their African lions had escaped and were just like living in the like jungles of Mexico. Like we were in the freaking wild. Because none of that terrified me. Although my mom heard something drop out of like the rafters of the thatched roof that we were sleeping under.
Nope.
Like woke up in the morning and lifted up her pillow and there's a freaking scorpion under her pillow.
No. I don't like that.
I don't remember if it was the deadly kind or not.
I remember.
It doesn't matter
if it's it was a scorpion the deadly kind or not.
Right.
It's almost as bad as a vampire.
I know, right? I was like, wow, my parents like took me to pretty gnarly. I don't remember anything about like, I don't think people got saved, but we almost died by scorpion. And then I remember going pee like in the forest or whatever. And I heard like the clanging bell of like a cow. And I looked up and it's like this giant ass bull is just like staring at me as I'm peeing and it's like a ways away, but I like stand up and I'm trying to like finish my business and it just starts like running. God no. Like, yeah. So I dodged the bull, but it was a harrowing experience. I feel like my favorite Christmas ever as a kid is we were in Tepic in Mexico. We were in this kind of apartment building with a few different rooms. And I remember there was never, ever hot water. There was a hot water heater, but it just like never worked. So like we didn't have a hot shower for months. But I remember we spent Christmas there and fireworks all night long. It was so loud. I remember being so tired. It was a very Catholic city. You have like processions. But my parents, they found some little store and got like a couple candies and stuffies. And they got these bandanas and they tied our presents up in a bandana. So it all fit in like one bandana. But for some reason, just because when you've been living without for so long, it was just so, I think we just didn't even expect presents. So in a way it was like, oh, that was like good for me to be like a less like materialistic piece of crap American child.
So I'm sorry. Were you sporting your Precious Moments Bible during this time period?
Oh, that's a good question. No, I was approaching 12. So I think I might have moved. I don't know if I'd moved.
Oh, did you get the team
Bible yet?
Your study Bible.
Yeah. I was like, I always thought I was older and cooler than I actually was. So I'm pretty sure I would have ditched the Precious Moments by this point.
Oldest child syndrome.
Yeah,
we probably were like, can I please get one of those like puffy covered and I RSV TLNE.
I mean, those mission strips to Ensenada when my dad was a youth pastor. I'm talking, I was like 8 years old when I went on these and I straight up thought those high schoolers were my like friends. I truly believed I was their equal. That is just how I rolled. So
I like that for little Lindsay.
That's like pretty much my Mexico stories. I went to Turkey on a mission trip with my sister in the middle of traveling Europe and, you know, went to Croatia, visited missionaries. Those people were great. They literally lived there. We're like helping people out. I have no complaints. But Turkey, we met up with a very small team. And so my sister went to Life Bible College for a minute, which was Foursquare. And weirdly enough, I met and dated a guy that I like thought I was going to marry, yada, yada. He went and did a YWAM DTS, broke up with me for Jesus. But then 2 weeks later was dating a girl who he is now married to. And he is a youth pastor. So dodge that bullet.
Did they meet at their DTS?
Mm. Sure did. He broke up with me, though, to focus on the Lord. He couldn't have any distractions.
Well, obviously.
While going out to the missions field, clearly. Like the worst and weirdest thing. Him and my sister, independently of one another, signed up to do OIM DTS in Montana. And mind you, they had, I think, signed up for this before him and I were dating. So my family and I, we drove to Idaho from Oregon. And then the boyfriend and my sister drove from Montana to Idaho. We all met in the middle, spent Thanksgiving together, which is like pretty pretty serious. Like, I thought I was going to marry this guy. His family got me Christmas presents. I remember this. And then the last day of the trip, he broke up with me for the Lord. The last night, very late. And I remember I cried and I cried and I cried. And then he drove back to Montana with my sister and refused to like talk to her because she was like, are you okay? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it. And then we drove through a snowstorm back to Oregon. My parents were driving and I sat in the way back of their minivan and just cried in the back seat very dramatically. He dumped me for the Lord and then married someone else like immediately. It was like, whatever. I dodged that bullet. Fast forward to many years later when I go on a mission trip to Turkey with that boy's sister and her husband. And we had kept in touch since my sister was in the Foursquare world. They were very Foursquare people. And so my sister went to Foursquare Bible College and I go to Turkey with them because they're thinking about moving to Turkey. So it's this couple, my ex-boyfriend's sister and her husband, me and my sister, and two single middle to later aged white women, six of us. We're scouting to figure out for this couple. They want to move to Turkey. It's a very secular place. It's unchurched. They have their reasons for why like it needs the Lord. And I think they're trying to form connections. But as I recall, there was no real plan. There was a lot of prayer walking. There was a lot of going outside of universities to talk to like college students because they're so secular and they think whatever. And so honestly, the thing I just remember is like traveling with two older white women who did the thing where when someone doesn't understand you, you just speak louder and slower in English. And one woman in particular, God, I will never forget her. She was addicted to Diet Pepsi.
Diet Coke.
Oh, dang. Pepsi, only Pepsi. And would just like be at a restaurant just being like, Diet Pepsi. Pepsi.
Bless her heart.
Just louder. And I wanted to die. And then, as I recall, I think my sister got into a screaming match with the dude because he was so intense. Like, looking back, he was like quite a zealot. Not much about him that I like. He like didn't have a plan. He was super judgmental. He just had a lot of friggin' rules. It was just like, we got to go out there and evangelize. We literally didn't do a single thing that was helpful that I recall.
Like, sounds about white.
Yeah. Like my youth, when I went to Uganda, I went with a team of doctors and I wore scrubs. I didn't know how to do anything, but I would like check people in and get them like, you know, they were like,
sounds.
It felt legit.
You had medical training. Did you?
No, God, no. I was 21 or 22, but at least I went with people who knew what they were doing and could help people on some level. The Turkey trip, no help was done whatsoever. 100% harm was done, as this Karen over here is yelling about Diet Pepsi. So those are my missions trip experiences. They're a little bit, they run the gamut, but you know, good times. For me, anyways.
So one of the things you said was you went outside the colleges and universities, and I never did YWAM. I had class-based issues with YWAM that perhaps I'll tell you about sometime. But my ex-husband was in YWAM for a weirdly long time in Brittany, Switzerland, at one of the YWAM bases that thought of themselves as like the intellectual base. And so they were really proud of their pedagogy and practices. He always talked about it as University of the Nations. I was curious to ask two real YWAM people here, if you ever referred to it that way or thought of it that way, it was something that people would say on their resume instead of YWAM. Did you think of it as education? Did you think of it as mission?
Yeah, in my YWAM experience, if you went to University of the Nations, you like went to the YWAM school in Hawaii. Otherwise, you just did a DTS.
Yeah, you have to do a DTS to before. It's like a prerequisite.
Yeah, before you can do
you can get in.
And then there's like, and then after that, you can do like a school of worship. The University of the Nations had more of the courses than anywhere else. Like Hawaii was the main one. I have another ex-boyfriend who went. There's a lot of like YWAM lifers. In fact, my youngest sister was a YWAM lifer up until 2016 and is currently actually the only one of my siblings who is just straight up is not a Christian at the moment because her experience in YWAM was so friggin' terrible.
Not surprising.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that I continued in Christianity after my experience at YWAM because I went through a lot of tribulations. The Lord was really testing me a lot during my DTS. I think the major one I'll talk about is I made a really good friend, just a lifelong friend who was like there when I needed them to be, was such a support person to me, really understood where I was at in my life and was at a similar place in life. But he was a boy and they didn't like that. They didn't like the fact that I was a girl and he was a boy. It did not matter that I was an engaged
19-year-old, or that he had a long-term girlfriend and she had a child. It wasn't his child, but he was very much a part of this kid's life. And we were just both in very committed, you know, romantic relationships, and we're not looking for that. And that's not what we ever were to one another, but our relationship was deemed inappropriate. We were forbidden from hanging out together, and we still hung out together. It was a life or death situation, my friendship with him, because when we were in Zimbabwe, we were walking back with a group of people from an internet cafe. This was back in the late 90s where you had to go to internet cafes sometimes.
Oh, man. I'm in mail. You just unlocked a core memory. I forgot about that. Thank you for that, Meg.
Yep. So we were walking back and there were different vendors on the road. And so we kind of got separated from the group, a group of three young women who were kind of behind us. A couple of guys had gone on ahead. And my friend and I, as we did, eventually would just be walking together, talking, hanging out. And as we crossed the road, we passed two guys. And as soon as we passed them, they came up behind me. They grabbed me. They dragged me off the road and pulled me towards a vehicle that was waiting with the door open. And if my friend had not been with me and had not physically intervened, I 100% know that I would have been kidnapped in that moment. And I don't know what would have happened to me next. But because he was there, he saved my life and stopped them from abducting me. I got away with my life. I had a lot of injuries and a lot of trauma after that experience. But they turned it into a spiritual warfare conversation, that the devil was trying to get me to leave, that I was obviously there to do the Lord's work, that this was just Satan trying to put fear into me, and really challenged me to stay, which I did. I stayed, and it took a really long time for me to be okay walking down the street, not with a guy, someone bigger than me, stronger than me. And we got in a lot of trouble before we left for this missions trip, because we would sneak out in the dark. I would make two cups of tea. He would go get usually like a bread or a pastry. Like, I think there was a bakery that used to give us their like day old stuff. And then we would go out opposite exits from the base and we would meet up in a park that was across the street. And I think we would smoke and we would drink our tea and eat our pastries and just talk about being homesick and talk about our families and, you know, talk about the Lord and talk about the goals we had. And that friendship, that bond still continues. We speak to each other. I don't know. It's probably been 5 years since I've spoken to him on the phone, but yeah, we still keep in touch. He will forever be a part of my life. When somebody saves your life, stops you from a kind of harm like that, I'm really glad that I was a disobedient girl. Really glad.
So you were forbidden to be his friend before the incident happened?
Yep.
Dang. Yep. Well, yeah, good on you for being rebellious.
I mean, the head of the YWAM base sat us down and was just like, this is inappropriate. You cannot be friends. You cannot be alone.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
And it wasn't like we were like in my bedroom alone. We're talking right. like we'd be sitting out on a bench.
Men just weren't allowed space. To be friends with women. I mean, girls were always really mean to me and I got along better with dudes. And it was just like, nope, you can't do that. Or, well, they're going to fall in love with you. And it's like, well, then, okay, I'll deal with that. Like,
Can we just for a second, though, recognize how weird and fucked up it is that like men and women weren't allowed to even be friends in these situations. Like I wasn't ever at YWAM, but my ex-husband has those exact stories. I did camp.
I was notorious in college for having guys that were my best friends that then ended up being in love with me later.
Yeah.
And then I was always like, wait, what? But I think our upbringing set us up for that because they drilled into your head that men and women can't be friends.
The reason I get frustrated by this is not just, oh, he like literally saved my life, but they were taking away a really beautiful relationship, one that was never sexual between us, was never line crossing or whatever, but we just had a bond. And at the time too, I really believed that it was God that brought us together. And I saw our relationship really differently. I saw it for the beauty, and he's Australian and his family was in Melbourne. I got really close with his sisters and his parents took me in and just treated me with kindness when I really missed my family. And the fact that that was going to be turned into something that it wasn't, I could have lost my life, sure, but I wouldn't have had those amazing memories and the relationships that I had with this guy, with another guy, and another girl. Those are my Aussie pals, and I love them, and they know who they are.
I don't have as much of an experience with Youth with a Mission myself. My whole family has. My sister was on staff with YWAM and was married to a Sudanese man she met through YWAM. They have biracial children. And every time she would say anything even remotely political, like on Facebook or what have you, she was accused of sowing division, I think was the word, and, you know, stirring the pot, what have you. So I was looking up today just some reactions or people leaving YWAM and how it's viewed. And I found this quote that basically said that hundreds of people have left and are now going on record saying that they were spiritually abused by immature leaders in YWAM who claimed to speak for God and warned that questioning their absolute control equaled rebellion against God.
That might have been a direct quote from my leader when they said, dude, I couldn't be friends with a boy.
They can say whatever they want and they're going to speak with the authority of God. And because they're your spiritual leader, you better listen or you are rebelling and you are in the wrong and you are sinning. And it's pretty gnarly. Like what? It seems like a pretty harmless thing. Like I know that people go into YWAM and short-term missions with good intentions. I know that they want to help.
I mean, I wanted to help and then I got accused of being some sort of a harlot or something.
Who among us hasn't been called a harlot?
Generally, as a population, it feels like every time there's a new scandal in any church or any cult or any whatever, everyone's always shocked again and again and again at the same exact story again and again and again. And to me, this is like, duh, of course that wasn't happening this whole time. And I think that's endemic in missions organizations. I've known more missionaries that came back from the field, whether short or long term, who had to deal with those repercussions of spiritual abuse, of that experience of being told, you're not as close as God as we are. We're the ones that now know what God wants to say to you. That is literally what religion is, which is why it's fucked up that like we act like, oh, what? That's crazy. I can't believe it. It is honestly modeled after the exact way the general churches of our time are modeled, which is a hierarchical patriarchal system. Uh-oh, I'm doing it again.
I do think that YWAM has a special thing that happened, though. My leaders who took me to foreign countries, two white young people who took me to places in Asia and places in Africa, I think that they had done their DTS one or two cycles before me. So that means 6 months or maybe a year before me. And I just don't think you're equipped enough.
I think all you have to do is one.
Yeah. And then you can be a leader on another DTS. And so we had these people, call them leaders, I guess, but really they were just handed authority and took it pretty extreme.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but like no 19 or 20 year old should be leading a group of 25 year old.
Get your prefrontal lobe.
Right. Ain't there till you're at least 25. So my dad, who was like the father of three, being led by an 18-year-old girl named Becky. I shit you not.
What was her hair like, though?
Blonde.
Not good, probably. Yeah.
Midwestern gal, like not fancy.
A sweetheart.
She struck me as like a Minnesotan blonde Becky. She was a nice girl. She was in over her fucking head.
No.
Sarai, I feel like you've been teasing a doozy of a missions trip story. Am I right on this?
Oh, okay. Well, I do.
I'm ready.
It's pretty bad. I never got to go to Mexico, but however, I did participate in preparation to go to Mexico on more than one occasion. And on one of those occasions, we had to go through this little cultural awareness kind of class, you know, led by our youth leaders in our youth group.
And well, hold on. That's like more than I ever did. I'm that's at least a little bit responsible.
It was. I remember being like a class, but you it's know, like I loved it because I could get an A in it. Grew up like Lisa Simpson and I was like, grade me, I'm ever so smart, that kind of thing. Anyway, so we were doing this course and a couple years ago, while we were moving our stuff out of the attic, there was this giant box that I'm pretty sure my mom and dad had given to me since I had moved into that house. I didn't carry a lot of stuff with me when I left my life behind. And in it were some of the manuals with like fill in the blank answers to questions that we had to do for this one particular mission trip to Mexico. And I opened it up and was like, this is hilarious. What? And I started reading my answers and the stuff, the questions in the book and stuff. And I seriously was like, I mean, I know it was the 90s, but what the fuck? I'm being taught racist, classist, xenophobia as my mission trip prep. I could barely handle reading it. Like, partly because I was so embarrassed and ashamed of my own participation and my 16-year-old ignorance or whatever it was behind this shit. But oh my God, I was horrified to see it and sad to remember that that's probably not like the last time that curriculum was taught. At any point in between that and, I don't know, 2015, did anyone ever think to ask any questions about that? And I don't know if that was the same for others. That's my experience growing up. Super white evangelicalism that really was middle class based. And I mentioned earlier that I never did YWAM and that I had class issues with YWAM because I grew up working class. When I went to college, I had a ton of scholarships. And so I was really lucky that I didn't have to take out a bazillion student loans or anything. But my family didn't have money to send or anything like that. So I kind of had to work my way through school. And then I had some student debt. And I just always had this like deep impression that I had to work my ass off to make it anywhere. And that if I didn't do that, or if I asked for somebody else to kind of help me along, that would be bad. That's just my personal workaholism problem. But the thing that was really interesting to me, it was so many of my friends would go and I would get all these different fundraising letters. You know, I worked at summer camp and I went to Christian college. So literally 90% of the people I knew to say, I'm going to wherever to do a DTS or Mercy Ships. That was another big one, like kind of YWAM adjacent, going on a boat.
Was that not YWAM? Mercy
Ships? It was, yes, but I think it's its own thing now. I don't know. Who knows? Oh. Mergers, departures, Christian organizations, they're baffling and confusing and tax exempt. So they could do whatever the fuck they want, apparently. So I got all these letters all the time from so many of my friends just asking, oh, could you send me $25 a month? Depending on how intensive their missions were, they'd also have kind of what's their monthly budget that they're trying to get. And I always would look at those and just be like, I'm sorry, I have a fucking job. I can't send you $25 a month so you can have more than I make at not just my one fucking job, but three jobs.
I worked three jobs during that time. Also, yeah. I had $20 to get me to and from school and all my jobs and everything. School's like 40 minutes away and my coffee budget. So gas and coffee, but it would stretch for like two, sometimes 3 weeks. I mean, whoa. The 90s, right?
Totally doable. I found myself having a hard time keeping up with my student loans and my car payment. And I don't think I even had rent. I'm pretty sure a lot of this was happening during the time I lived at the mortuary. You know, but it was happening for years. And so by this time, I was probably like 25. And I really got to a point where people would send me a budget that was like, we need $5,000 a month so we can put $2,500 into savings or something. And I'm like, what? I'm not here to pad your wallet so you can go on an exciting international adventure, even though you pretend you're reluctant because you've heard the call of the Lord or whatever. Like, no, actually, I'm going to stay here, work all of my jobs, never have enough money, but always have enough money for Tillamook brand cheese
and usually beer.
I thought you were going to say tithing.
Oh my God. No,
when you fuck started no. with Tillamook. I thought you were going to say tithing.
No, honey. Oh, no, 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 no. You know why? Because I interpreted the Bible on tithing to mean bring your tithes to the storehouse so they can be distributed during times of famine, which is what tithes are for. So if it's so you can have a nice building and keep the lights on there and pay your 16 staff, well, I don't really feel like that's tithing because it actually doesn't come back out for anyone unless they beg and plead and, you know, comply with middle-class white people norms. But I digress. So anyway, I just thought YWAM was fucking classist because most of the friends I had that did it had parents that were more wealthy than mine. Not everyone. Okay, so I know you didn't come up in that way and you did YWAM, so I'm not mad at you about it. I'm just saying most of the people I worked with at camp or even in college, a lot of people's parents were paying for their college and stuff like that. I just was on my own at the age of 18.
If it makes you feel any better, my sister who spent 10 plus years with YWAM now is on the brink of being a single mom and has no real like work experience. And she's making it. She's doing it. She's got a job. And thank goodness her like job was like, oh, you like led teams of people across the world. That shows some like leadership skills, which is true. But it sure shit does not set you up for success in the real world.
I will say this about short-term or long-term missions that has always been hard for me. I remember as a kid, missionaries coming home on their sabbatical to raise money for their future trips. And they'd all sing songs and be like, here's the amazing things I'm doing and all these poor children I'm saving single-handedly and Jesus or whatever. They didn't all have like useful skills. They would just be like, oh, I'm preaching the gospel. And I'm like, well, can you help people get some food or water? Like, I just always felt like if I was going to go do something like that, I would want to have something to offer more than just Jesus. Like I loved Jesus then, like super much, but I didn't really feel like it was my job to make people believe a different thing. That's a weird thing to notice.
I've had issues with short-term missions for a long time. And in fact, my youngest sister and I got into some arguments about it because I didn't support them financially and never did. I just didn't want to give my money to YWAM. They just always skeezed me out a little bit. But so I found other ways because she's my sister and I did want to support her. So like we got a family plan with them. And so we like paid for their cell phone bill. Like I do things like that. But I was like, I don't know. I could never explain it. And it's funny now she's like, oh, I get it. Like I couldn't have that conversation with her then because she was so in it. But I just felt like, I don't know, this feels all really chaotic. And like, what good is this? And even as a person who into my 20s, you know, I went to Uganda and I look back on that time with pretty mixed feelings. Again, I went with a team of doctors who did some legitimate good. And of course, we went to an orphanage. I ended up sponsoring a child who I still keep in touch with to this day. And I could pat myself on the back and be like, we provided necessary medical care. You know, we did some things. But when you do the math of what short-term missions cost to send us all, 30 to 40 people went to Uganda. And so I think about like, what if we had just taken those thousands upon thousands of dollars? What if you took that and invested in infrastructure or invested in sending medical resources or sponsoring people to go to medical school or whatever it is? Do I think it's wrong to provide free medical care for people? No. But just the thought of like these 20-year-olds all need to fly across the world and save everybody. It's like, no.
Also, you could do it without proselytizing, right?
I could go on about that forever, but I think that like we are all probably in the same boat where we are now older and we are wiser and we look back on these experiences and it feels cringy, right? It feels like a lot of wasted resources is what it feels like to me. I don't know. How do you feel?
When I was on my DTS, I was really there for the service aspect of things. That's not why I was sent there, but I wasn't good at public speaking. I wasn't good at getting people saved, as you know. I never led anyone in the sinner's prayer.
Not a single notch in my belt either.
No jewels in that crown.
I'd say that's my greatest non-regret. My greatest gratitude is I never tried to convert another person.
That's really, yeah. I like that feather in your cap. I have that Thank feather you. In my cap. I like that yep. dress. What I didn't like was the fact that it cost a lot of money to send me there to dig ditches or clean bedding or dig well trenches. It cost a lot of money. I guess the positive thing about it is that we were young. We had lots of energy. We were, you know, at our fittest and most muscular. We could kind of like, I mean, we weren't having sex, so we had to put all of that sexual frustration somewhere. So why not dig some ditches? But that money, thousands and thousands of dollars.
Okay, so she's connecting.
Could have been. I want Christians to be able to connect with the
local people
to help it support have to be a and build
infrastructure.
And in my mind, as long as it has nothing to do with,
do you want
to
we'll give you water if you come here this
talking
sermon.
About ways that,
or we'll give you a meal
if you come help some churches, to this Bible some study. Houses,
there should not be ulterior motives
do some
when you are trying to help people.
Yeah.
At least that's my humble opinion.
For a moment.
Wow, I share that humble opinion, and I don't even feel humble about it. I'm just like, no, this is correct. This is how you do it.
What is your, if you had to distill it down to, what's your main problem with short-term missions? Like, what, like, gets you in your soul about it?
White saviorism
Ooh.
Is probably the top thing for
Tell
me.
Tell me about it. Let's pretend I'm a person who has no idea what white saviorism is.
Okay. So you are both talking about wasted resources. As you're talking, Meg, about, oh, you could just send that money to people. I immediately know that people would not, white people in America, in the evangelical churches, let me just say that's the group of people I'm talking about, would very likely not trust that as much as they trust sending little Maggie or little Lindsay over to another country to be the conduit of this word of salvation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that evangelicals have other goals besides evangelism, really.
Current evangelicals, do you think that they, you know, there's some sort of efforts to partner with local on the ground people and maybe not change things as much? You know, it's a little less like you have to hear the Bible in English.
Yeah. Thanks, Wycliffe Bible Translators. Woohoo! Mission accomplished.
The thing that I was raised with was the Lord cannot come back until every tribe and every tongue and every nation has had the gospel preached to them. So it was a big, big, big deal. It's less of a deal now, I understand, now that technology is, but like going and translating the Bible into every language and getting to every little tribe, that is a prophecy that people believe in. I don't even think it so much matters that they like accept the Lord. It's just that they have to hear it, right? Like it just has to be preached to them. They can choose hell if that's what they desire, but
they desire hell.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, instead of maybe sending kids, white kids predominantly overseas to become little white saviors, maybe we just help our neighbors.
Yeah.
Like actual neighbors who don't have homes here. When I was 18, I went to another country, and this was the first time that I had seen what, and the most heartbreaking thing for me to see families, old people, young kids were living in these really terrible conditions without drinking water, without a place to go to the bathroom. They had shelter. You know, I don't know what kind of food they had. But they were built when you were driving through to get to town. They were shanty towns is what they told us. And I was like shocked by that. But I think I was shocked by that because in America, we really hide
people.
We tell them to hide. We force them to hide. We move them away.
And we cite them. We give them fines. We put them in jail if they keep doing it. And we have not learned to provide a place to rest, a place to sit, a place to sleep, and a place to shit. In this country.
You know, I'm trying to do something in my community. I mean, not just my community, my neighbors, like with the people who literally live next door to me on my same street, my little dead end drive. And I started doing it with our chicken eggs. We don't charge anybody for them. We just are like, nah, we can afford the $50 a feed. And also they're hilarious and adorable. And I love having them around. And for a family of three, we don't need six eggs every day, which is what we get. So I like it because having a surplus means that I get to take it to my neighbors and I get to give them free. I mean, they're delicious eggs. True. And, you know, at first they're a little bit like, here's $3 or, you know, but now we just share stuff. So we all have gardens, we're planting different things for one another so we can just give them to each other. Sarai, we do this with our gardens. It's like you plant the zucchini. We did both plant a lot of tomatoes this year.
Oh my gosh.
So we're going to have to share a lot of salsa.
That's why we have to have a salsa party. So yeah, what an idea. Being just in your own neighborhood, building, I guess, community.
Wow. Like, almost like a barter system, except that we don't keep track or charge people. We just, they give us some lettuce. We give them some eggs. They have extra squash, you know?
Yeah. Are you ever like, here are some eggs. I'd like you to have them because they symbolize the triune God. It is but one egg. And of this egg are three special parts. The shell. Let's call that God the Father. The white. I don't know. Holy Spirit. Wait,
do you
or
call
whatever.
The shell God the Father?
I don't remember which is what. It doesn't matter. But the yolk is another one of them. So those three personified penis holders, I assume. I don't know about the Holy Spirit, but according to Luke chapter 1, he did come on Mary. So you tell me. You tell me.
Sounds like a dude.
Yeah. Or do you not have strings attached to your egg deliveries?
Personally, I don't. So my neighbor that I give eggs to, I talked to her about maybe putting out a little farm stand in the neighborhood where we could just all put all of our extra produce and it would just be like free to whoever wants it. And bless her heart, this sweet old neighbor said, oh, but what if homeless people come and start to know that there's like free food here? So what I said, wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't it be so wonderful if our unhoused or our lower income neighbors could get fresh produce, eggs, veggies, fruit from our neighborhood? And they would be able to see our neighborhood as a welcoming, caring place where they could eat fresh produce instead of garbage food.
That is a novel idea.
But isn't that what it should be? It should be reciprocal. That's really beautiful. That is how human beings should interact with one another and help, help each other out without the price tag or without it being so loaded as to like, if I do this, then you do this. Like, that sounds beautiful to do.
I still love that her first reaction is, what if homeless people came here instead of, will rats want to eat those things? Because we have a huge fucking rat problem in our town. Like, give me a break.
I was more concerned about rodents, frankly, like squirrel. We have so many squirrels that just come and eat my fruit off my tree.
They just take little bites of it and leave it there. And I'm like, why are you like this?
Eat the whole thing or share it with a friend. Like, that's you could bring five or six squirrel friends. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be gluttonous. You could just share it, but don't waste it. That was
take
a good
the whole speech. Cherry home. All of it.
All of it. I want that for you, squirrel.
Enjoy.
Birds, not the rats.
No, rats can fucking die. All of them die. I'm hexing you right now.
I don't think all short-term missions are evil. But as, you know, Sarai pointed out, there's been so much harm done in the name of Jesus in other countries. And I think like the thing too is that in America, we don't do that shit at home. We don't do it here. And I think that like it is taking me till now. I do a lot of work with my current church with like the houseless community in Portland, and that was never a thing that was really like, I mean, my parents took us to like soup kitchens and stuff like occasionally growing up, but it wasn't a thing that I really thought about, nor did I have an interest in. I just like frankly was like, I had the attitude of like, you did this to yourself and so I'm not gonna help you. Truly, that is what I thought, which is fucked up.
We do have options for being able to offer meaningful service where we are all the time, and I think that while I'm no longer a part of any organized Christian church and will never be again, there are so many resources that faith communities can bring to bear. Driving around, we see a lot of churches with a lot of land. And in my most recent position working with our county, part of my work was to work with faith communities that had large land to create ways to build Yigby homes. Yes, in God's backyard. So cute. To combat NIMBY, not in my backyard, which this whole town is literally just white liberal NIMBY people who are like, I'm not a NIMBY, but if you build a place for people to live across the street from me and I have to look at it, I don't want to see it. That's a literal thing that someone once said to me. But churches do have resources. They have bring your tithes to the storehouse and those tithes will be distributed in times of famine. How does a church legitimately get out and share resources with people who need them, whether they deserve them or not, whether they ever comply with what you think is common courtesy, good behavior, Christian morals. Literally, you're talking middle-class white people norms. So if we're looking for somebody to put on a clean suit and tie and go out and beat the streets and get a nice job sweeping floors, like that isn't always possible for people. And in fact, Christians in particular value this puritanical work ethic, which is a thing that I don't really see in the Bible. Like Jesus is never like, help poor people, but make sure they work for it and that they make you sad because it involves children or something. It's literally our definition of what it means to be chronically homeless in particular is that you have been homeless for at least 12 months in the last 3 years and have a disability. So it's not like you can be unhoused and not have a disability and be counted as one of the people most in need of housing resources, which is how we distribute those resources as a nation, as our, at our governmental level. What if churches had funds to help people get better access to housing? What if they were able to create housing that's affordable to people of all incomes or free in a lot of cases? So we have a couple of good examples of that in our area. One that I love is an organization here called Square One Villages has partnered with Peace Presbyterian Church on River Road to create what's called Peace Village, where they're building 70 plus, I can't remember how many, it's like 75 or 76 or something, units of housing that will offer home ownership opportunities to people with very low incomes using a cooperative community land trust model, which probably I'll just do a whole podcast about someday because it is my favorite. That's an example of how this can work. The church was going to retain ownership of the property, but it turned out to be more advantageous to them to sell it to Square One at a lower cost, even below market, and then have a lease back agreement where they have access to all of those buildings that constitute the church part of the property every Wednesday and every Sunday when they have their Bible studies and their services. But otherwise, people who will live in that village have access to those facilities throughout the week. So it's kind of a beautiful acknowledgement in that case of a church saying, we are an old and aging congregation, and we're not probably seeing an influx of young people coming in, but we want to make sure that this property that we own free and clear is available as a resource to our community where we've been for so long.
Truly giving back to their community, right? By creating a community center out of the facility that rarely gets used. That's my biggest complaint. Every time walking by, not just a massive church lawn, which is being watered and maintained and paid for, but the entire property itself. I mean, these warm or cool, depending on the season, full buildings with usually commercial grade kitchens, full bathroom facilities. I mean, maybe not showers, but we could add those pretty easily, I think. And we could create community spaces. These facilities are already within every single neighborhood in America. And if this kind of land use could be done with more churches, more facilities, I'm not advocating to kick people out of churches. I'm not advocating to stop people from congregating. I think it's great. I would just like it to positively impact the community instead of negatively impact the community. That's just my humble request for churches.
I like it. Yeah. And if your church doesn't have a whole lot of property on it and you have a beautiful building, I highly recommend turning your sanctuary into like a pub.
I like it.
My favorite thing to do is buy a church and convert it into a pub.
It's one of the best things. As long as there's a lot of places where food carts can be as well. That's I personally would love to see every church turn into just a community space that has food carts and drink things. And I mean, there's already playgrounds for kids and big open spaces. You could have your dog and picnic tables, but also we could have housing.
If you want to convert your church into something cooler, like housing and or a public house, y'all just give me a call because that is weirdly my specific area of expertise. Oh,
I'm here for it. Good. And especially if you want to do it in my town right next door to me on one of the two corners within three blocks that have giant church properties on them.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
Mm-hmm. I don't, Great. think about scripture all that often anymore. I'm not a big like Bible reader, but I was thinking about the verse about like that he has anointed me to like proclaim good news. And it's like, what is it? Like freedom for the prisoners and like sight for the blind and to set the oppressed free. Like that is what the gospel actually says. And unfortunately, short-term missions has just actually oppressed a lot of people. The helpfulness has gotten lost in the, I must save you from hell and change you to my ways and make you speak my language and adopt to my customs. And because you are different than me and that's not okay. And it's pretty messed up. And I think that like we have all dipped our toes into those waters, and thankfully we are far beyond that now, and we can look back and cringe. But yeah, I do have a little, I think I'll always have a little bit of guilt for those places that I went and I'm like, oh God, we were probably just really annoying teenagers who just made Americans look bad and make Christians look bad. And I just, the whole thing, if you didn't grow up evangelical and you didn't go on a missions trips, I'm happy for you. That's what I got to say. I hope you just took normal vacations to places and you didn't have to go to places and preach about the Lord. That's what I hope.
Yeah, but how are you going to get someone else to pay for your vacation if you're not doing the Lord's work? Oh, I love it. You know, actually, New Mexico is not that expensive to travel to. So if it is within your means, you could just decide to go there and play on one of the newer versions of the same exact playground both I and my second fiance built.
New Mexico does not need any more playgrounds. And old Mexico, OG Mexico might not either, for that matter.
I mean, Lindsay and I just took a trip to Santa Fe and it was fantastic. I highly recommend it to anyone. Save your money and go on a vacation there. Call me if you want some tips on places to go. Call Lindsay if you want tips on places to eat.
Yep.
If you need to know anything about Farmington, the only thing I know is that constantly renewable playground.
Find organizations that are on the ground doing the work and support them. It's like the same thing like with when you're looking at like abortion rights, like find organizations in your city that are doing good things and support them. The hubris of American Christians is that we feel like we can go over there and create a new thing that's better. Mm-mm. We don't need to do that. There are people out there who are doing the work. And whether you want to support Christian people or non-Christian people, it doesn't matter. Find someone who is helping other people, no strings attached, and maybe find something that hits your passion, your soul in a way. What is the thing that you want to see change in the world? And rather than spend your thousands of dollars to fly over there and like fumble around and ask for Diet Pepsis too loudly, go find some good people to and go to, because it does exist. And this isn't just like bashing people who want to do good, because those people are out there, and maybe just like don't do YWAM. That's my hot tip. Just don't give your money to YWAM.
You mean University of the Nations?
Yeah, no, that's not a real university. It's bogus.
Let's just try to love our neighbor in a way that is biblical, I guess, or not. It doesn't matter to me.
Love thy neighbor in the biblical sense?
Sure, that one too. But love thy neighbor as thyself. We're so good at being selfish in America. We are so good at putting me first. Maybe we do try to love our neighbors as we love ourselves, you know?
Do we put ourselves first when we were raised to be P31s? Like, I don't know.
I know.
I don't know.
I heard myself say it and then I was like, wait, I don't do that.
Same. I was me first. And then I'm like, literally when?
Yeah. I think I'm talking more culturally and probably more towards white men.
White men, listen up. I'm sure you're flocking to this podcast because it's definitely you're our intended audience.
Mm-hmm. We're glad you're here. Thanks for joining us for this last 2 seconds of our podcast. Do want us to think about how do we take that short-term mission mentality that we had as young people, whether it was to go on an adventure, to hang out with cool people, to make a difference in someone's life. And let's just fucking do that in our neighborhood.
Yes, yes.
I like it. I'm in.
That wraps it up nicely there. We're just here to make you a little bit uncomfortable, maybe a little bit hopeful. And, you know, you might feel a little cringy too. That's okay. We were young, we were dumb, and this has been Holy Ghosting.
Holy Ghosting is a Same Team Media production. Music by Weep Bar. AP Weber produced the show.
Thanks for joining us. And if you miss us in between shows, you can find us on socials, posting almost every day at Holy Ghosting Pod, Instagram, and TikTok.